This is tape four of the Steve Mishay interview. We were talking about Ellen Zwilling's
The Gardens,
and you mentioned the
Eric Schultz, the producer.
They got an Emmy Award?
Yes. That was a regional Emmy Award, okay. Not a national Emmy Award, uh-huh. By the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Must be correct here. And Eric Schultz, who was the producer, who was the mastermind of those programs, left. Actually, he went through the MSU weekend MBA program and got an MBA, and then, strangely enough, left and went to the New Jersey Public Television Network to do performance programs.
Was able to use it as a springboard, is it?
But our public TV stations have to make decisions about where they want to focus on their programming, and the station here really isn't big enough to be a major regular producer of national programming.
Mm-hmm.
And not big enough, I don't mean to belittle the station, but the problem is that the minute you commit yourself to doing that kind of thing, the local programming suffers.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow you decide, you know, I want to be a producer of these shows that are on PBS.
Mm-hmm.
All the time.
And a contrasting station would be like GBH in Boston.
Correct.
Some of the other shows.
And San Francisco and Los mm-hmm. Angeles and New York, mm-hmm. they're the ones that produce all that programming. But they have multi-million dollar budgets, and they're constantly having financial problems. It's so difficult to produce those kinds of programs.
Mm-hmm.
So long ago, we made a commitment that in addition to our local programs of local interest, that we would focus on statewide programming because we were in the capital. So we are there are seven public radio stations in Michigan, and we are the public, I'm sorry, television stations, seven public television stations in Michigan, and we are the public television station that produces virtually all of the statewide programming, the programming that's carried by all the other stations. Off the record, which we've done forever and ever.
Mm-hmm. With Tim Skubick?
With Tim Skubick, who mm-hmm. lived in Shaw Hall with me and worked at the WKME, the Shaw Hall closed circuit radio station in the 1960s, and did the Friday night dances mm-hmm. with me. Tim Skubick is still doing Off the Record and has been. He calls himself the senior capital correspondent, and I always used to crack up because I thought that was pretty funny, but boy, he is now the senior capital correspondent. I just did an anniversary thing for him in the studios 2 years ago, mm-hmm. anniversary of the show.
Was that the 25th? Or
you know, I think it was the 30th.
Oh, 30th,
I have
okay.
to check that. Right. But and without hesitation, the governor showed up,
uh-huh.
you know. He's done a beautiful job. That show, Off the Record, tapes every Friday morning, satellite uplink Friday morning, broadcast on every public station in mm-hmm. Michigan over the weekend. And then we do a series called Michigan at Risk, which is always a topic of statewide concern that we produce here. That program is carried live, well, not live, but simultaneously, at the same time, same night, on every one of the seven Michigan public TV stations.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do a lot of specials, the governor's State of the State address and legislative specials, programs like that. So that's our niche. None of the other public TV stations in Michigan are producing programs for the other stations mm-hmm. on a regular basis, occasionally.
What's the Michigan equivalent of C-SPAN? Is it Michigan?
Oh, that's Michigan Government Television, okay. MGTV. That's not a public TV thing.
I see.
That actually is financed by the cable companies.
Oh, really? Okay.
Now, we have an excellent relationship with MGTV. We work with them. We put all the MGTV programs on the campus cable system here so faculty and people can use them in their classrooms if they wish. And for a long time, I don't know if we're still doing it, we were doing the archiving of all their daily broadcast. And they use our material occasionally when we have something. I think if we had a, we occasionally will do an interview with the governor, a long form, you know, an hour, half hour interview. They would ask us for that kind of material. Oh, and when we do the State of the State, we do the State of the State address and the opposition party response live every year. And that used to be expensive because we had to haul cameras down there and microwave the signal back here. The legislative television system working with MGTV has all the cameras and facility there, so they share, they do the video part for us, so they save us quite a bit of time and money by working together on that. So we work closely together. We're also working much closer with the local commercial stations. We have a partnership right now with Channel 10 WILX, the Lansing State Journal. We're doing, together, the three of us are doing mayoral debates. We did them last year. Mm-hmm. We've done some joint projects. It's a good thing. It makes you feel good working together with other TV, other media in in Lansing.
You mentioned the the cable networks controlling the Michigan government broadcasting. Mm-hmm. Was there any relationship in terms of local, like Comcast or some of the other cable companies?
Yeah, the relationships with the cable companies are interesting. For a while, the cable company managers, local managers, were turning over so fast that as soon as you established a relationship, they'd be gone. Mm-hmm. I don't know what was going on. Either they were growing so fast that they kept moving these people to other places, or they were getting rid of them. I don't know what it was. Mm-hmm. But I'd say over time, our relationship has always been relatively good. But then there are various different FCC matters that are much more formal, where we have to have agreements with cable companies, for example. For example, cable companies fall under FCC rules regarding whether they have to carry certain off-the-air TV stations. The cable companies, frankly, would like to carry as few off-the-air, by off-the-air I mean your local stations that have transmitters, as they would like to carry as few as possible because they don't make money on them. Mm-hmm. They make money on the cable networks. Mm-hmm. And the shopping network. So they like to keep their channels for other purposes. Now, they're not nasty about that. But we had an instance, for example, where we were on the cable in Ann Arbor. A good place to be, to say the least. Uh-huh. And the cable company there dropped us. And it's very complicated, the FCC rules, but they had the right to drop us. Mm-hmm. And it was unfortunate. If I might go off on a side, one of the most interesting things that ever happened to me was I was deposed, a deponent, for a Supreme Court case.
Oh, really?
And this was Turner Network Television and Time Warner Incorporated versus the FCC. And the issue that ultimately went to the Supreme Court was an FCC rule called cable must carry. The rule said that if a television station put a strong enough signal into your community, you had to carry it. Okay? So prior to that, the cable companies didn't have to do that. So, and see, so here's how this evolved. I hope I don't go off on this too far, but the way this evolved was, early on, most people didn't have cable, so it didn't matter. If you lived in Kalamazoo, you could watch WKAR because you watched it off the air. Then cable came to Kalamazoo, and fewer people watched stations off the air, They watch them on cable. In fact, today, cable penetration, what they call cable or dish, combination cable and satellite dishes, is 90%. Mm-hmm. So there are only 10% who are watching TV stations off the air today. Well, suddenly then, if people used to watch you in Kalamazoo off the air, but now they have cable, and the cable company chooses not to carry you, you've lost lots of viewers. And the FCC confronted that issue and said, well, wait, this isn't right. People are disaffected from their opportunity to watch TV, so therefore we're going to require cable companies to carry any station that puts a strong enough signal into their community that could be watched off the air. And that's what they sued about, Time Warner and Turner and a whole bunch of cable people, that it was unfair for the FCC to force them to carry WKAR in Flint, which where we are on. The reason I was deposed was we had evidence that the attorneys loved. This was through America's Public Television Stations, the lobbying organization for public TV stations, that demonstrated beyond a doubt that when we were removed from cable systems in Ann Arbor and Kalamazoo, that our membership income in those areas dramatically decreased. So they caused a financial hardship for the stations, because people in Ann Arbor, if they can't watch us, they're not going to give us money anymore. So that was why I was deposed. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court ultimately ruled in favor of the FCC. Mm. And that's why we can still be seen on cable systems in Flint, where we wouldn't be if that law had not been upheld. So then I read the whole Supreme Court decision. It's big. I mean, those things are really, really big. And yet I'm not in it once.
Yeah.
There's no reference to
me. Not even a footnote.
No. But it was fun. And being deposed at this big legal firm in Washington, D.C. with these, excuse the expression, slick lawyers who came down from New York working for the big television companies. It was quite an interesting day.
Mm-hmm. What was the relationship in terms of time from when U of M and Flint dropped you, or Kalamazoo, when they dropped you to this lawsuit? Was it several years, or was it relatively close?
It was 4 or 5 years.
4 or 5, okay. So you regained the Ann Arbor audience then?
We regained the Ann Arbor audience, and we regained the... It was difficult, because we had to start writing letters to cable companies saying, according to FCC rules so-and-so, you have to put us back on, we're not on. So it became somewhat of a contentious issue, but we were determined we were going to be on where we were entitled to be on. Mm-hmm. The reason Ann Arbor dropped us is you only have to carry so many public TV stations.
Right.
And so they dropped...
Yeah, 56, or channel?
56. They dropped us. Why they ever did this. They dropped us and put on the Toledo public TV station.
Oh, really? Yeah.
And there's nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're talking about cable. One of our recent things with cable is now, again, a must-carry agreement for digital, because that's now a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
We're on the air with our digital TV station, but the cable companies don't have to legally carry that digital TV station.
Hmm.
The Lansing Cable Company is carrying the digital TV station, but only on their more expensive digital service that you have to pay extra for.
It almost sounds like a similarity between the shift to FM
absolutely.
And now the shift from digital.
Absolutely. That's going to be the most dramatic change, is the shift to digital from analog. Well, that'll be even more dramatic because the analog stations have to go away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The TV stations that people watch today suddenly will disappear, and there will be nothing left but the digital stations.
Mm-hmm.
And I just keep saying, there will be riots in the streets when somebody turns on their TV one day and all the stations are gone.
They'll be looting Best Buy and ABC.
Well, fortunately, they're getting less expensive. Mm-hmm. And the FCC has done what they did with UHF television. WKAR was a UHF TV station. Went through the same thing as FM.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time when there was no UHF on TVs.
Mm-hmm.
nothing above channel 13. And then the FCC finally required that every TV that was manufactured have both UHF and VHF. You can't buy a TV today that doesn't have 2 through 63 or whatever, 83, whatever it is. Well, they're doing the same thing now with the TVs. That it's being phased in with the bigger ones right now. But there will come a point in time when you cannot buy a TV, a legal TV, that doesn't have the digital capability. That's the way they're going to do it. But how long do you keep TVs? So at some point, there are going to be a lot of people who aren't going to, well, and then the issue again becomes cable. If the cable companies aren't required, this must carry rule again to carry those digital stations, you're going to have that same problem again.
Are you aware, was that challenged again at all, or was that pretty much accepted?
Okay. It's still kind of evolving because digital TV is still so new. I mean, we just signed our digital TV station, WKR digital TV, went on the air a year ago. It's been on the air a year and a half now, 18 months. We actually signed on the digital TV on the exact date at the exact time that WKR TV, analog TV, went on the air 50 years earlier.
Wow, interesting coincidence.
Well, we made it happen that way. And that was a nightmare, building that digital TV station.
Where was that located?
With the equipment. We had serious problems with the equipment that we purchased because it was so new and so expensive. That's in Okemos on Adobe Road.
Okay.
MSU owns a little nature preserve research area out there. And the TV and radio stations have been out there for a long, long time. The FM, the AM's on the MSU farms.
So there was some equipment problems with that?
Well, see, here's the problem with digital. By the way, we're on the air with our digital radio stations now, too, both AM and FM. So we've got WKR AM, WKR FM, WKR AM Digital, WKR FM Digital, WKR TV, and WKR DT, which is the way the FCC says you've got to do that. So suddenly we've doubled the number of stations without having the extra money to run them. This is a government mandate. The radio wasn't a government mandate. And the radio was relatively inexpensive compared to the TV. The TV we've spent up to this point with the digital probably close to $3 million. And we do not have the capability of doing local programming. We cannot locally produce programs in high definition TV because every piece of equipment we have is not compatible with the new digital high definition, certainly, format. So there still has to be this another equal expenditure of $2 to $3 million more to equip the control room studios and field capability to go out and produce a program, you know, outside the studios.
Well, beyond the $30,000 for the tape recorder, the recorder.
But luckily, as with everything electronic, the prices are coming down. But it's extremely different, sophisticated. Our nightmare was the antenna. They had to replace the 2-ton antenna that's sitting on top of the 1,000-foot tower, and I've always been fascinated by the transmission process. A lot of managers probably don't even know where their transmitter is, but I certainly like to go out there and see when they're doing this kind of thing. That was quite an incredible, those tower climber company people. I don't do heights.
Like steeplejack.
They scare me. But they had to take off the top of that tower this 60-foot-long antenna that had been up there for 30 years and put the new one up there. The new one cost over $400,000 because it was the combined analog and digital. And shortly after they did that, it blew up.
Oh, no. Of its own accord, or was there lightning strike? Or
no, it was a fault in the manufacturing. So suddenly, there we are with not having the digital is no big deal because not many people can watch it at that point, but the analog was gone too. Channel 23 was gone. Luckily, when we installed that, we put in a temporary antenna halfway up the tower so that when we did work, we could switch to this other antenna. So we had to switch to that other antenna, which significantly reduced our power. People could not watch us in Jackson anymore.
So the caused images all degraded.
All kinds of problems with the cable companies out there who could only get these really awful pictures. And we went through, oh my goodness, I think it went on between the time we blew that antenna and we finally got it replaced, it was 4 or 5 months because they had to take it down, come up, come back out here, take it down, not an easy task because it takes them forever to put all the rigging on the tower, take it down, truck it away back to the factory in Maine, do an autopsy on it, decide they can't fix it. They convinced us to switch to another kind of antenna, which caused all kinds of changes in the, you know, the electronic configuration. So it was just a nightmare.
Was the timing bad too, in terms of?
Well, when you don't reach as many people, you're not raising as much money.
Yeah, and that was during the fundraising.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Of course.
Worst case scenario.
Yep.
Yeah. In terms of the internet and how that affected broadcasting.
Oh my goodness!
How would you talk a little bit about that? Because that obviously occurred during your tenure.
Well, we very early got into having the web page and streaming the programming. Okay. So everything that's on WKAR radio, with one exception, it's a copyright problem. The radio reader.
Okay.
Because you're
reading
an hour,
the copyrighted book.
Everything else is streamed live on the web, so you can hear it anywhere in the world. And that's been fun, getting emails from people saying, I'm an MSU alumnus, and I used to love WKAR, and I now live in Japan, and I listen to the station, and it's really fun. So that's been fun. Plus, the good thing about the radio web pages is all the local programming is archived, too, so you can go back and listen to it later. So we had a graduate assistant a few months ago who won an award, a programming award, and I had not heard her piece, her award-winning piece, but you could go listen to it because it was archived on the website. The TV is a little different because, again, it's a rights problem, so you can't put PBS programs on there. But all the local material is, again, archived there. So you can watch the off-the-record shows. You can watch the Michigan at Risk shows.
So teachers could use those in class or public school.
And then we run another website called WMSU.org. See, I used the MSU call letters. We did that on purpose. So that
to help the board,
so the board would feel comfortable.
They wouldn't attack the WKAR logo.
And we used that
for
MSU-related stuff.
Okay.
If you go there, there's all kinds of stuff. Commencement addresses, symposium. It's a free service to the MSU community. If you do a international conference at Kellogg Center, we'll put it on there for you.
Okay.
And that's fun, and that's the kind of thing we like to do. You know, we need to do something for MSU, and we do, you know, we do a lot for MSU. Sometimes there are people who think we don't do enough, but we're reflecting MSU all day, every day.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about also the history of certainly the 150-year anniversaries, and obviously WKR has been an important part of the last 50 years of the institution. And are there any ways that you were involved in the preservation of the MSU history on, or how it was presented on both TV or radio?
I'm sure over the years there are things that are archived here, and we're just going through our tape library again. I mean, I just saw the other day a program. Oh, some of those things were so dreadful. but it was there was a young student here named Jim Spaniolo, who was the editor of the State News, who became the executive assistant to President Wharton, who went away, became an attorney, worked for the Knight Ritter newspaper chain, and ended up as the director of their foundation in Florida, and then, as you know, came back here and was dean of the College of Communication Arts until just a year and a half or so, and has gone on to be the president of a university in Texas, I believe. But anyway, I just saw that the other day. It was Jim Spaniolo, assistant to President Wharton, interviewing President Wharton about what's going on at MSU, broadcast on WKAR. In beautiful black and white. So there are those things, and they're around. I don't know if they're in the university archives or if we have them. I know that we had a bunch of film that we did transfer to the archives recently. And we are working with the university on the official sesquicentennial television documentary. There will be a really good, I'm confident, documentary that's being produced.
Yeah, it's good to hear that at least some of those things are being preserved. They'll get a wider audience, I'm sure.
I must mention, because we're beyond the 60s, but one of my embarrassing moments, just for the record here, is that I have the distinction in 1969, a young man, 25 years old, who was working at the University of Minnesota Public Television Station, applied for a news job at WKAR, sent an audition tape and scripts that he had written for his station, and I sent him the thank you very much for your application, we appreciate your interest, however, letter. And his name was Garrison Keeler. I have the letter I wrote. So I rejected Garrison Keeler for a news job at WKAR.
And now the station plays Prairie Home Companion for years.
They think that's pretty funny at the station.
And have you met? Did you meet him?
In fact, they did. They actually did two of the national shows. WKAR sponsored two of the national shows. We did them here.
Yeah.
But that was when Garrison was simpler. Mm-hmm. The venue had to be a funky auditorium. Mm-hmm. So it was Eastern High School, and I forget where the other one was, but they were Lansing High School auditoriums. And the admission was $5 or something. Today, this as we speak, I think they're making a movie, a motion picture that Garrison Keeler wrote about Prairie Home Companion with big stars. I mean, I think it comes out in the fall or the winter. So it's much more than it was at the Eastern High School auditorium for $5.
That's quite a distinction. I'm glad you brought it up.
When Garrison was here, we went down to the Lansing City Hall because the mayor, Terry McCain at the time, was going to present him with a key to the city. And I remember that because Garrison and I went down to Lansing City Hall, and there were two Garrison Keeler moments when we were on the elevator with a young couple who was going to get their wedding license at the city clerk's office. And this woman, the young woman, I don't know, yeah, I must have said, do you know who this person is? He's famous. And she said, no, I have no idea who he is. And Garrison Keillor said, oh, I wrote Moby Dick. And then we went up to the mayor's office in the Lansing City Hall, which is on the top floor of the City Hall, and Keillor walked over and looked out the window at the Capitol, and he said, this must give you a feeling of great satisfaction sitting up higher than those people.
That's great. In looking, let's maybe talk a little bit about your retirement. Let's go back. I forgot to ask about the fire.
Oh, the fire.
Yeah.
Oh, my.
I was on campus then, and I was on my way in from into Morrill Hall, and I had to take a different route because I saw the smoke. But when the Quonset hut burned.
That was the good fire.
Tell me about that.
The good fire or the bad fire?
The good fire. Well, let's talk about both. Let's start with the MSU TV, WKAR TV in the Quonset hut.
The Quonset hut story was that we had moved into the Communication Arts Building, and the TV station was in, there were, as people who know MSU history, a whole city of Quonset huts over where the Breslin Center is located now. And the TV station was located in this handsome Quonset hut mm-hmm. for years. It was actually the mess hall. So it was the biggest, probably the biggest Quonset hut over.